Art at the End of the World is brought to you by Salter Street Brewery, one of the beer havens in Toronto's East End, one of my personal favorites, in fact. You can visit Salter Street Brewery just south of Queen Street East near Broadview. They have limited parking, or just get off the 501 streetcar at Queen and Salter. Discover this hidden gem. Salter is made up of a small, passionate team of beer lovers. All the beers are made right there on site, including Riverside Pilsner, the flagship Salter Street beer, also available in LCBOs, beer stores, and some grocery stores. Go and have a great hang at this Cottage Vibe Brewery, or take some of the fresh beer to go in their hand-filled howlers and tallboy cans. Salter Street Brewery is a perfect stop on your East End beer tour. It's dog-friendly, available for private events, and features live music on select Saturdays. It's open noon until 9 p.m. every day, salterstreetbrewery.com, or check them out on Instagram and Facebook. That's at Salter Street Brewery. So I guess I just say sachet. Good day, greetings, hello. It is Art at the End of the World, the podcast that features artists, entertainers, cultural leaders, and drag queens speaking about what it is to make art here at the end. My name is Mark Wigmore. Welcome to episode 7. This was originally going to be the final episode of Art at the End of the World, season 1. But I really loved the conversation I had with drag performer Heroine, a.k.a. Matt Cassano, and he's an old acquaintance of mine. She's an old acquaintance of mine. And I thought, why not bump it up a little bit to this particular spot? And we had an opening. So more on Matt in just a moment. So I hope you're doing well. If you happen to be in the East, I hope you're dealing with the cold weather. I'm pretty tired of it at this point, I'll be honest. I'm feeling very regimented. I'm feeling like I have a bit of cabin fever. It's at that point now where we're, you know, a couple weeks into March here. Enough already, right? Some of you have heard me hosting The Oasis on the new Classical FM here in Toronto. Thank you for sending along notes. If you have, that was really, really great. I am on from 3 to 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time weekdays. That is 12 to 4 Pacific. I'll say it has been a challenge to host and produce a 4-hour music show and then also host and produce a podcast like this one. Not going to lie, it's taking up a lot of my time, which is good. But at the same time, every second counts. So it does start to pull at your brain a little bit. I have a household to run. I have animals. I have family. I'm in the Big Brothers program. So I'm feeling a little routined. And I have to admit, I actually am looking forward to taking a little break from Art at the End of the World, the podcast. Of course, we will return. I think it's going to be bigger and better. Lots of interest from potential guests. But my goodness, it has been a slog. But I'm so grateful for everybody listening. And I'm so grateful for everything that's happened because of this podcast. I also want to point out, I've started at a new media organization. And one of the nice parts about working within different genres, I've worked with jazz and top 40 and all over the place, really, is that you get to discover all these great artists that maybe you wouldn't regularly hear. And specifically this time around, it's working with classical music. And I have to suggest, this is such a great record. I've been listening to it. Montreal's Alexandra Strelinsky. The name of the record is Inscape. It's on all the streaming services, or you can buy it if you do that, whatever that used to be. But it's just a beautiful little record. So once again, Alexandra Strelinsky, the name of the record is Inscape. I want to point out that the podcast is brought to you by Red Eye Media, an absolute innovator in arts, communications, and media relations for over 15 years. Really good people there. Red Eye Media works with leading film, television, performing arts organizations to build their audiences and their impact through engaged, passionate, and strategic communications. Those organizations include Pacific Northwest Pictures, the SummerWorks Performance Festival, the Toronto Dance Theater, the Musical Stage Company, Canadian Stage, Crow's Theater, many others. For more information on the power of Red Eye, visit redeyemedia.ca. So even though I've been very routined and haven't been out much, I did manage to get to the movies this week, and everything I saw seemed to be about space or was in space. I saw Captain Marvel, the latest from Marvel Studios, and I have to say it was nice to sit with the critics again. It was an early morning screening at the Scotiabank Theater in downtown Toronto. Even though I paid through the nose for a parking spot, it felt good to be back in the fold after 9 months of being out of the game, 9 months since my finale with Jazz FM. And since it was International Women's Day on Friday, I don't think it was any coincidence that Marvel Studios introduced its first female lead superhero movie, Brie Larson in the lead. It also features the first woman to write a score for a Marvel superhero movie. So cultural tipping points a go-go. I have to admit, I didn't super love it. It was serviceable. It was nice to look at. It was somewhere in between Guardians of the Galaxy and Thor. A lot of it was in space. I don't know that Brie Larson brought a lot to the table for the role. I don't know if it was that compelling of a story. We think about some of the other offerings in February from this company. Last year it was Black Panther. My goodness. I mean, game changer. And then the year before that, Wolverine. Not that it's part of the same Marvel universe, and I don't want to nerd out too much, but that was the February release, and it was amazing. I think that's my favorite of all the superhero movies. So I don't know that we're going to see history repeat itself with Captain Marvel, but like I say, first woman to lead a Marvel movie, and composer Pinar Toprak becomes the first woman to score a Marvel superhero movie. So that in itself is great. And last weekend, this is such a great documentary. It's a sort of a cinema verite style. It's called Apollo 11. You've probably heard about it. They've been showing it in IMAX, but I know they've expanded. It's at TIFF Bell Lightbox and a lot of regular theaters now. But boy, it was great to see it on the IMAX screen. This is footage from the 1969 Apollo 11 mission, first mission to the moon. I guess if we're conspiracy theorists, we also would note that that was the same year that Stanley Kubrick's 2001 came out. I don't really want to go down that road, but yes, Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin, and we really are taken step by step, bit by bit. We are shown what it is to be in that rocket, to launch, to circle the Earth, to fly through space, to circle the moon, land on the moon, and then do it all over again. And we also are seeing America apparently unified. I don't know that that's totally true, but from this movie's perspective, it is that everybody was behind this endeavor, and it went beyond a space race and beyond military might and all the rest of it. It is really something to see. I can't recommend it enough. Apollo 11 on in theaters now. So enjoy space if you head to the movies this week. I want to get to drag performer, drag queen, heroine in a moment. But first, Art at the End of the World is brought to you by Superframe. Superframe offers custom archival framing with a mandate to enhance and protect artwork, but not compete for attention with that artwork. This is a great arts institution in downtown Toronto, an art-focused frame shop. They offer only the highest quality frames and materials. They specialize in custom milled hardwood moldings, which they finish in a wide range of stains and lacquers. They mill and stock their most popular profiles in quantity to ensure the fastest possible turnaround. But they also are able to design any custom profile with a little notice. Superframe offers water gilding and photo framing, and their services include professional installation, transportation, and display systems. Visit superframe.ca to find out about all the services offered by Superframe, and you can make an appointment there as well at their shop in downtown Toronto. Superframe, check them out at superframe.ca. All right, so heroin. A.K.A. Matt Cassano, A.K.A. Heroin Marks. That was her first drag name. This is a very hilarious person, an inventive person, a thoughtful drag performer, industrious, courageous, an incredible drag performer and drag queen. She's been performing for more than a decade. And I first met Matt in 2008 when I took a gig at a brand new radio station called 103.9 Proud FM. It was around 2006. I had finished my gig with News Talk 1010 CFRB, and I was looking for something new, and I saw this ad. I guess it was the usual thing, right? Milkman Unlimited. If you're a young media person and you're looking for a gig, it's not a bad place to check. I still look there once in a while. But they were promoting this new radio station that wasn't even built yet called Proud FM. It was going to be LGBT focused. And I didn't really know anybody there, but I had sort of a friend of a friend who was had a line of communication with the program director at the time. I had a meeting. They hired me for very little money, but it was a great gig in the sense that I was an afternoon drive co-host, producer, and I was also the entertainment editor at Proud FM. Of course, people have heard me talk about this experience before. I mean, it was the craziest 3 years of my broadcast career. It was wild, is what it was. And, you know, as a straight white guy, you don't get a lot of opportunities in Canada to be a minority in any situation. And that was exactly what happened to me. I was really the lone straight guy on the air amongst a group of incredible, talented broadcasters. Well, some of them were just learning to be broadcasters, but performers and comedians and show business people. So I was working with Ken and Mary Jo, Mary Jo Eustace. I was working with Maggie Casella, Sean Prue, Deb Pierce, Kashmir Ray, Rob Basile, Bob Ouellette. It was an exciting time. It was an exciting team. And in comes this real young kid named Matt. And I could tell that he was serious and he was professional, but at the same time, he had a wicked sense of humor, confident beyond his years, and also emotionally available in the sense that he was willing to, you know, if something was affecting him, he let you know. You know, he was in touch with his heart. And I always had a soft spot for him. I just thought he was a really nice guy. And it was at that time that he tried drag for the first time. He put on this really wild outfit. He's going to talk about it in a few minutes. And eventually I saw him perform at the old Zelda's on Church Street when it was still right in the heart of the Church and Wellesley area. It was a pretty amazing time to be there and to see all these performers. And I could tell that Matt had a lot of talent. His first name for this persona was Heroin Marx, which I thought was a little crass, but he has since changed it to Heroin, which I think, you know, it's probably a good move. Just, you know, it's more palatable. And, you know, I left there in 2010 and I've worked at numerous places ever since, but I've always kept an eye on Heroin's career. And it seems like everything's gone really well, and Matt has really succeeded with this avenue of his life and this artistic vision he had for Heroin. She's busy, she performs a lot, and it's exciting, and it's been fun to watch from afar. And you know, Matt and I aren't close; we're acquaintances at best. So for me, it was just pleasing to see what was going on. And a couple times over the years, though, I did see that he was running into very, very difficult situations, harrowing situations, really, scary situations with angry people or with people who were disgruntled or people who were confused or had a lot of baggage around sexuality and gender and sex. He would sometimes recount what had happened, and it always felt awful to me. I would think to myself, we live in a very progressive city. We have safe spaces for the LGBTQ community. We have a pride parade that is the envy of most countries in the world, most cities in the world. And yet he still had these stories to tell, and it was heartbreaking. And so somewhere between his triumphs and his success doing this work and being great and being funny and being entertaining and the difficulty that he was facing for just expressing himself, I really felt like I wanted to have this conversation and reconnect with Matt and find out more about his experience. And so let's do it. Here we go. By the way, it should be noted that there is some ambient noise in the interview. You will notice we recorded this at the fabled Second City, right in downtown Toronto, the Toronto Second City, the newly added training center, which is a great space for performers and kids. So from downtown Toronto, here's my talk with drag performer Heroin. Second City Training Center, full of children right now. By the way, Matt Cassano, but on Facebook I see Matteo.
Yes.
Is that the correct?
Matteo is just the Italian way right. of spelling and saying Matthew, and I think it's exotic.
What do you get? What do you get from, like, do people mix it up, or do you...
Oh, I get, like, Matteo, and I'm like, I'm not a cereal. Like, it's Matteo, like... Matteo's.
But friends call you...
I mean, my closest friends usually just call me Heroin now, so right. that's like... There's that, but most great. People just call me Matt or Matteo.
Right.
Actually, when I started working here, I had people be like, what's your name? Is it Matt? And I was like, yeah. And they're like, oh, someone said Matteo. And I was like, yeah, it's Matteo too.
So more or less the conversation we just had.
Yeah, pretty much. It's like, and then everyone's like, which do you prefer? I was like, just call me whatever and just right. don't call me late to dinner. That's right. all.
That's true. And I always called you Matt because that's a long time
yes,
since you and I have seen each other. We worked together at 103.9 Proud FM in Toronto, Church and Wells.
Yes.
And you came in, what was your
gig? I was hired in the elevator.
There. Heard a few things happen in the elevator yeah. there.
Oh, really? Oh, I did not know that.
Come on. You didn't. But you can imagine.
Oh, I can imagine, especially where we were set up.
Yeah.
Yeah, I...
Just a young kid.
Yeah, I was... I think I was...
Finding your way.
19 at the time. I was working for a Fab magazine, and I had to do an interview where I had to interview some of the on-air personalities for an article. And I was in journalism school at Ryerson. Yeah. And then I got on the elevator, and this woman got on, and she was like, how are you? And I was like, good, how are you? And I told her what I was doing. She's like, oh. And I was like, yeah, I kind of want to intern or do something here. I think it'd be fun. And she was like, well, I'm the CEO, so here's my number, and let's chat. And she's like, yeah, I'll bring you on board. And then I became a copywriter, and then they had me in sales for a while, which was very odd.
I remember you sort of jumping around.
Yeah, it was very much just like, yeah. put him wherever, he'll figure it out
yeah.
kind of thing.
And, you know, for being such a young person, you were very, it seemed to me you were quite confident. Maybe that was just you on the outside, but...
Oh, well, no, I think I've always, I give off a confident...
That's what I'm telling you.
Yeah,
image. That's what I was getting.
But sometimes I can, like, not feel confident whatsoever.
How were you feeling in those days, though? Like, were you just like, okay...
I was full of pep. I was ready to go. I was, like, excited, and it was all new and exciting, and it was an adventure.
Yeah.
I saw a lot of changes there, that's for sure.
I was there for 3 years. I mean, it stands, as far as my radio career is concerned, as maybe the most fun I ever had.
It was definitely fun. There was a lot of... like Lady Gaga, before she was famous,
remember
showed up to
Pred
FM.
Through?
Yeah.
Which was huge. Yeah. And we had so many people like that, like icons of the LGBT community. You know, we'd have the Golden Girls, you know, whoever was left
yeah.
from the Golden Girls would be on. Or, you know, some of the big dance queens from the disco era
yeah.
and that sort of thing. So
yeah, it was very interesting to see the revolving door.
So I leave in 2010, and it's a big explosion.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm trying to replace what was going on for you at that point, because it was all of us on air staff, and then what happens?
Yeah, I forget when I left, actually, to be completely honest.
Was it around that time, or did you stick in a little longer? I don't know.
I think it was actually before then.
Yeah, it might have been.
Yeah. Because I believe I was only there like a year and a half, and
right.
then they started doing cuts. Because I was still with Fab, I started doing drag while I was at Pride FM.
I remember that.
That was like that. Actually, the idea of me doing drag started in the Pride FM studio, because Deb Pierce was hosting a Halloween costume contest in 2007 on Maitland, And I said, I'm like, oh, maybe I'll dress up as you. And she was like, oh, that'd be hilarious, blah, blah, blah. And then so that was the whole plan. And then
I vaguely
it kind of took
this.
Off to yeah. something else. And then I was like, I'm going to dress as Marilyn Monroe and have a giant merkin with like crabs on it and call myself the 7-year itch. And it just became this ridiculous concept. And that's, yeah.
I remember right away I learned something about your sense of humor in that moment, because you had been fairly, I wouldn't say reserved, but you were somebody, you were working hard, you were trying to find your way in the radio business.
Yeah.
You were working for, like you say, Fab and a couple different organizations. But then I remember that.
Yeah.
Marilyn Monroe with crabs. Was it crawling on the dress? Or?
They were just underneath the dress.
Okay. So they were kind of creeping out.
Yeah. So right. that when the white skirt went up, like in the 7-year itch, it would just be like, oh, that's the 7-year itch.
Right. You know? So there it was. So right away, we're learning that there's this tongue-in-cheek, a little bit of crassness, a little bit of cheekiness.
Very camp.
Ready
Very
to
camp,
go.
Yeah.
Just all in, pre-installed.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah. Like I always say, my drag persona actually developed in high school as my defense mechanism from bullies. Yeah. You know, like I took a lot of like Karen Walker. I was obsessed with Will and Grace in high school. I used to watch it with my mom. And like that sass, that confidence, mm-hmm. I took a lot of that on to deal with the bullies that would harass me. So I feel like that's where my drag persona actually really started.
Okay, so let's get there. Born in Toronto or?
I was born in Hamilton.
Okay,
yes.
Hammer. And how long does that last?
I left at 17.
Okay.
Yeah. So my guidance counselor considers me a success story because I made it past Mississauga.
Suddenly... crawling, just working your way around Lake Ontario.
pretty much.
Yourself here. So that would explain some of the bullying, I would imagine.
Hamilton?
Yeah.
Oh, God, yeah. Yes. I was an Italian in the closet in a Roman Catholic high school.
Yeah.
Surrounded by a bunch of people who were very heteronormative and just did not know how to take me. I wasn't out,
right.
but I also wasn't really hiding.
No.
If that makes sense.
So, yeah, right. So you may have presented as...
Yeah, like people might have been like, questioning what he's up to.
So what's the family situation? Siblings, both parents?
I have a younger sister.
Okay.
My parents never divorced, but my dad did pass away.
Okay.
When
was that?
He passed away in 2009.
Okay.
Thanksgiving weekend, 2009.
Right.
That's my family unit. We don't really talk to other members of my family because they haven't been the best of people to my mother or my father. And we were just a 4-person unit and just very supportive and caring.
They were pretty supportive of you growing up?
Oh, yeah. Like, yeah. When I came out, like... totally fine, no issues. Like my dad before he passed would come to my drag shows, you know, so like it was a very loving small but loving family unit.
So sort of
had.
This insular group of four, so a bit of baggage.
Yeah,
there,
it was
but
interesting,
but nothing really to do with in the sense of, you know, your own personal journey and coming out and all sort of thing. Just sort of
yeah,
family like, dynamics. We have them.
Well, I was accepted into Ryerson, so I moved to Toronto when I was 17. I was turning 18 that October, but I knew as soon as I moved to Toronto, things were going to be different.
Yeah.
Like, Hamilton felt like a jail to me.
Right.
And I knew once I moved to Toronto, I would definitely... And I hate when people say, oh, I found myself. But, like, I just found an environment to be myself. It was funny when I walked into my dorm room for the first time. I opened the windows, and the first thing I saw were the two gay cowboys on the barn. Because, like, my dorm room literally looked out onto Church Street.
Right.
So I felt like Dorothy looking at the yellow brick road. Right. I was like, oh, here it is. My people. Finally.
So when I think about that, that's, I guess, early 2000s when you're in high school. Is that fair to say?
Yeah, mid-2000s? I believe 2005
right.
is when I... 2005, 2006 is when I left.
Because we think of ourselves as a progressive city and a progressive society here in Ontario and Canada,
yeah.
but you're still very much witnessing the changing of culture, and of course it's still changing today, but you're...
Gay marriage had just been legal for a few years by that point.
Right, Right. So your middle school, high school experience was kind of typical of somebody in your position, just dealing with the bullying and
with the 1998 sex ed curriculum still. Right. This is a cucumber. This is a condom. Right. This is what you do.
I didn't even get anywhere near that far. In my own, like, yeah, I'm a, you know, 80s, 90s. There was nothing, you know, it's just like, okay, you be careful. You
yeah.
There's a bit of that.
You're going to get syphilis and die. Yeah.
So what happened? When do you come out?
I came out my second year of university.
Okay.
So I just turned 19. I was able to go to bars, and I made friends with other queer people, and I just was like, okay, now's the time. So I came out to my mom first. Well, I came out to my sister first, and her first reaction was, oh, you can't tell mom and dad. I was like, I'm pretty sure they already know. And she was just like, she's like, I just don't want to fight. I just don't want to fight. And I was like,
Don't hand me this luggage and leave me to walk home, you know, with it. Yeah.
And then I was like, I'm like, okay, relax. And then I think about 2 weeks later, my mom came to Toronto, and we actually watched an episode of Will and Grace, because she and I used to always watch Will and Grace together Thursday nights. I was like, Mom, I have something to tell you. And she was like, is it that you're like Will? And I said, well, more Karen, but yeah, pretty much. And that's how I came out to her.
Were you at all pleased when they decided to bring it back?
Oh, God, yeah.
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 Good times.
Well, it was needed for the time. Like, Trump was in office, then it's like, no, we need to make America gay again, you right. know?
Yeah. So let's do this.
Let's flip
and,
the MAGA.
And on network, not on cable.
Exactly.
Let's get to the people here.
Yeah.
Sort of felt that way, weirdly, about that way about Roseanne, too. Like, not in the sense that it's, you know, obviously Roseanne turned out to be a disaster.
Well, yeah.
But I think a lot of the messaging of that show, regardless of her presence, has been kind of important to the conversation, which is fascinating to watch.
Well, it's interesting to know that, like, Wanda Sykes and, like, Whitney Cummings were, like, behind the scenes writing, too. Like,
right.
You could tell they were, like, definitely writing for Aunt Jackie on that show. Of course. And Roseanne was writing her.
Now they're all writing for Aunt Jackie.
Yeah, pretty much. So, that should have just been the spinoff. Forget the Connors.
Yeah, no kidding. So you alluded to it a little bit, but there we are in Proud FM, and you get this idea for a Halloween costume, Deb Pierce,
yes.
And you go with the Marilyn Monroe. I'm sure I remember seeing you in this outfit, actually.
Oh, yeah.
And so
I've done it for some throwback Thursdays.
Right. And so tell me about your original, I mean, what gave you the confidence to even go that far and think, oh, I think I can pull this off?
Some friends and I from school actually went to a bar one night on Church Street. And I walked in it and I saw this drag queen wearing, like, cow print and really bad makeup and a really weird crusty wig, and her real hair was coming through, like, in the front, and I was just like, oh my God. And she was kind of drunk.
Yeah.
I was just like, what a mess. And I was just like, I can do better than this.
Okay, so it wasn't like, I kind of love that, you know, tragedy that I'm looking at. It's more that I can exceed.
Yeah, I can do better than this, and I can actually, like, entertain.
Yeah.
Because, like, I've always been told I'm funny. And
you are. You're hilarious, I think.
Thank you. And I just, like, I was like, I don't think I've ever felt as confident as a man. I thought, okay, drag can be maybe a vehicle to do that. And, like, just now, 12 years later, I'm, like, becoming that comedian I want to be in drag. And it's actually helped me with my confidence as a man somehow doing drag. So
funny how that works.
Yeah. Because, I mean, anyone who can get on stage dressed up, wearing all this makeup, being uncomfortable, first of all, in everything you have to wear, and still trying to make people laugh and entertain, like, it takes a lot of guts to get up there and do that.
And it does.
To be judged by a room full of people you might not even know, who might not know you, and it's just based on, like, their first interaction with you, what they could perceive of you. So
there's so many elements, too. I mean, you think about, you're talking about being funny. I think you do need, often you need to be funny. Some people don't go totally down that road, but that's a big part of it for a lot of performers. But then on beyond that, you usually need to have some sort of musical theater you know, skills or music skills.
And that's the thing. I've never had any sort of background training in that.
Right.
Like, everything I have done has been just improvised and guessing.
Right.
I like to call it.
Right.
I'm just like, I'm guessing when I go out there. I'm like, oh, some jazz hands, a little spin here. Let's just make this up.
I've told this story a few times. I actually came here about 2 or 3 years ago to the Second City Training Center, and I took stand-up, which some people think is a preposterous idea because you should just have it in your bones. But I felt like I needed to be around people to work on my writing and so on. So I did. And the big finale of that was to stand in front of a crowd of 200 people in a, you know, dark club, something that you do all the time, and go be funny and just have the spotlight on just you and entertain. And I will say, in all my years of radio, to the millions of people I've spoken with or spoken to over the broadcast airwaves, that was the most terrifying moment in my life, in my show business life. It was really, really difficult. And and I have such admiration that you get up there and do that sometimes 2 or 3 times a week. I mean, it's incredible.
Yeah. Like, I've performed for almost 12 years, and just last year I took my first stand-up class here at the train
center. Oh, you did? Okay. You and me both.
Yeah, and I was like, oh, this is very different, because a lot of times I would go out and wing it, and I just learned with stand-up, it's like, oh no, there's like a method to things that people don't realize.
Right.
And yes, for some people, it's a lot more natural.
Yeah, right.
And I feel like the class just actually helped accentuate what I already had and just hone it in a bit. But yeah, I was very nervous doing that show. People were like, oh, why are you going to be nervous? You've been on stage for how long? And I'm like, because this is kind of different.
It is a little different.
It's like, it's not me being like, go to the bar, grab a drink. You a bottom? Are you two together? You know, like, it's like, oh, I have to, like,
less crowd work.
Yeah. It's like, oh, they're actually going to be listening and hearing what I have to say.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not background noise.
What did you have to do that at Absolute? That's where we did ours. I don't know.
No, we did in the JCB here.
Okay. Very good. So that's all right.
Yeah. So it was good. It was a packed house, but I did it in drag, obviously, because I'm only going to be doing comedy and drag.
I was going to ask if that's what you decided.
Yeah, and I had to open the show because I had a gig that night, so I had to be the first one up from my class, and there was a lot of people who brought their parents, and I was like, oh, they're not ready for this.
No.
They are not ready for this.
No, I love you being first.
Oh, I know. That was
just setting the tone. It's going to get easier after this. So tell me about picking Heroin Marks. It was pretty early, and it's a character that you're, I guess, character. I don't know if that's the...
Yeah, well, the Marks has been dropped.
Okay.
So it's just Heroin.
It's just Heroin.
Because originally I started as just
More
Heroin.
Accessible.
Yeah. I started just as Heroin, and it was just... The idea was the name was to embody all the female, strong female leads that have influenced me growing up. Yeah. And like, I was like, okay, well, this will encompass all. Because some people will like do a play on a celebrity's name already, or take a last name from a pop diva. But I was like, no, I'm just going to encompass them by calling myself something that you wouldn't normally hear.
Right, right.
And then people were like, well, you need a last name. You need a last name. And I was like, well, I don't know. I can go with Heroin. And then Marks was added. And then people were like, oh, is she a drug addict? What is happening? And I was like, and I always say, I'm like, I wouldn't have this figure if I was a drug addict.
Right.
Like, I'd be a lot smaller. Right.
I remember thinking it was a bold choice.
It was.
At the time. I felt like, okay, we're just going down that road right away.
Yeah, it was meant to just be like, so when you hear it, you're like, okay, this is not to be taken seriously. This is supposed to be funny. This is not like a glam pageant, like, oh, I'm Devereaux the Third, like blah, 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 all that stuff that some of these pageant queens do. And as time went on, I just started hating the Marks. And I was like, no, I'll be like Cher and Madonna. Right. I'll just go one name because I do want to expand past Church Street. And when I've done TV things, I can't use my last name, my stage last name. So I was like, I'm just going to be Heroin.
I think that might have been. I mean, of course, I loved it at the time because it was so in your face and it was so provocative. But I think it's just maybe. It just going from a business perspective, it seems like a smart move.
Yeah.
Obviously, you take all these idols and these women, these strong women, you talk about that, and you pack them all into this persona.
Try to
The one thing I remember, and I don't know if this has remained, but seeing you in some of the, you know, early Zelda's drag competitions and so on, mm-hmm. it was pretty, you were pushing a lot of boundaries. Like, you were going for it. And
there, in what sense?
Well, just it seemed there was a group of people that when the spotlight was on in that situation and there was this sort of sense of competition, that people, it was almost like, how far can I push this to push people's comfort levels?
Oh,
to,
yeah.
You know, be outrageous. Tell me about that part of it for you, and has that changed?
Starting out, like, the thing is, when you're starting drag, you really want to make a name for yourself, and uh-huh. you really want to stand out and be memorable. So yeah, I did do some. It wasn't like always pushing the envelope. Like, I did an Octomom thing as Joan Crawford, and I uh-huh. had like 32 babies just flying out of me out of a tank.
I might kind of remember that one.
Yeah, and then I did like a cracked out Snow White, who like does this like happy song from Enchanted, but I kill all the animals as I go along.
So this is what I'm talking about.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know, you know, now that you present it, yeah. How did we even really need to search? I mean, it was all right there. But I remember going, oh my goodness,
yeah.
you know, being in the audience and thinking to myself, boy, not everybody could get away with this in a comedic setting. But mm-hmm. for some reason, all these drag queens can. And what is the license that happens there? And what is the motivation to even want to do it?
Well, for me, it's always parody.
Yeah.
You know, it's satire, it's parody, and that's where it comes from. And then it develops and it can get a little twisted. But I think
it's very creative. It can be very
creative. It can be. It can be a very interesting creative process coming up with things.
Have you ever seen someone go too far?
Yes, I have. I've seen some people change their skin color.
That old routine.
Yeah. Their skin tone and
that's off limits.
Oh, that should always be off limits because I don't think anyone should be presenting.
But that would be under that umbrella a little bit as far as, you know, I'm going to push the boundaries, but maybe I will give it enough context so that it could just be, you know, just go under the wire.
Mm. But I know there's some people I look back on and things that they've done and I'm just like, this is uncomfortable.
Right. I mean, there's probably elements of, even your show that might have been uncomfortable for people, but it seems like that seems to be part of the, I want to do something here. I want to make a splash and I want to, you know. So there's that. But what about from the more profound and emotionally, you know, mature perspective when you're trying to do something that's maybe really beautiful or mm-hmm. has something to say? I mean, do you think about it from that perspective as well?
No, I always go for the laugh. Like, for me, personally, watching a drag show, like, I want to laugh. I want to be entertained.
Right.
You
do occasionally see a drag show, though, where it does work on that. Like, it's a very beautiful, rendition, even if it's a lip sync of a song that's very beloved or whatever.
Yeah. Like that's fine. But like when people, like I've seen people perform and they dedicate it to family members who have passed and things like that.
That's what I'm thinking.
Yeah. Like I myself wouldn't do that. Like I was dealing with my dad's passing and him going through all that, but I never did a performance on stage. I just tried to find the funny and keep going. And I never wanted force upon people to give me all this sympathy, you know, like, my goal when I'm on stage is to make people laugh. I'm not there to gain sympathy or.
Was it cathartic for you while you were going through your dad's passing? I mean,
it was tough because like he was coming every week and he was there when I won finally. And they were usually because the night that Drag Idol happened was Tuesdays and he was going through chemo Tuesday morning. So they would literally, he would go to his chemo, then him and my mom would come to Toronto and then they would watch the show and then go home. So like it became every week it was me trying to top myself to make him laugh. Right. So that was the goal always, to make him laugh. And if I made other people laugh, then great.
Was that the dynamic growing up, like a lot of laughter around the dinner table and that sort of thing, where you're trying to make your dad laugh your whole life? Or
I wouldn't say my whole life,
yeah,
but I definitely tried to like entertain,
right?
I used to like put on little shows in the backyard for family, and pretty sure that's when they were all like, really? God,
this is a really good magic show. Yeah.
Watch my heterosexuality disappear.
Nice riff.
Yeah. Yeah, it's so I feel like when he passed, I kind of like lost that for a bit, like, because I was like, oh, my goal was to make him laugh. What's my goal now? Kind of thing.
Right. And then you won.
Yes.
That was nice.
Yeah. It was some nice money.
Yeah. Nice money. That's the part we remember.
Well, it just paid for everything I put into it. That's the only thing. I don't even think I broke even doing that contest.
That's something else I've noticed. There seems to be a lot of sewing going on, a lot of looking for, you know, elements to put in the show. A lot of, you know, there's a lot of shopping that happens.
Yeah. Well, I've definitely noticed, like, now that I'm 12 years into this, like, my style and aesthetic has definitely developed and changed and evolved. And now I look for, like, before I used to be like, oh, that looks cute, that looks cute, that looks great. But now I'm just like, no, this is going to be a piece. Mm-hmm. You know, like, it's an investment. So you get something, you pay whatever you have to for the fabric, for the design, embellish it, accessorize it, like... I treat them now as like little images of myself. Like, okay, well, this one is for when I'm doing this kind of music, or this is for when I'm doing this comedy mix. And like, you have to treat it that way. I just can't go on stage wearing something that looks pedestrian now. Like, before, I used to, no problem. Like, I'm like, oh, I got this at Winners. Oh, it looks cute.
Right.
Now I'm like, no, I don't want to wear something on stage that someone could walk into the bar wearing, you know? And that's definitely where my mind has evolved now. And it's just more trying to be a Joan Rivers in drag, kind of like that over the top comedy voice that's ridiculous and just really glammed up with big Italian hair.
Right. And it must have been at the beginning very, you know, it's fun. It's fun to dress up, and it's fun to imagine ideas and all the rest of it. But it sounds like now it's actually a real point of pride.
Now it's just like, this is my image, this is my brand, this is my business. That's how I see it now. Before, it was just, it was like a little side hobby that I was developing that became really profitable for me. And now I just treat it as, okay, this is a persona, this is a character, this is something I've developed that I want to take into different avenues.
You've very much become a performer. This is, I mean, you started out in the radio business and going to Ryerson and all that, but the show business life. You're here at the Second City.
Yes.
You're on stage a lot.
Yeah. It's fun. Like, I definitely realized that I needed to try different things, because I didn't want to be pigeonholed into just the stages on Church Street.
Yeah.
And like, I've had experiences where I've gotten to travel, and I've gotten to experience bigger stages than what Church Street has. And I was just like, I want more of this. And I want to, like, I want to bring this, but bring it out. And outside of the village, outside of spaces that normally aren't queer or have seen queer representation. So I just want to really expand.
I feel like we're in a good time for that.
Oh, for sure.
What do you... taking from the modern interest in drag, because you know, everybody sees now reality TV. RuPaul is sort of peak RuPaul at this moment.
I think it's jumped the shark, personally.
You do?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we've got Drag Race, we've got the tours, we've got the spinoffs.
Well, it seems now like, if
it seems more popular than ever, so it's hard to argue with that.
Yeah.
Reality.
Like, I will say the pro has been that now it seems like it's very fashionable to have a drag queen at an event. Mm-hmm. So there's more opportunities for like local Toronto girls to get booked for certain things. Like, I've been driven 2 hours out of the city just to do a bachelorette party. I've done like fundraisers. I've done like, I get contacted for certain things, and it's because they want a drag queen there to like make it fun. But then there's also a lot of cons with it, because these Rue girls come into town and they get paid thousands of dollars, and the local queens who get booked to open for them get nickels in comparison.
Right.
You have people who are willing to pay $35 and up for a ticket to see a Rue girl, plus additionally for a meet and greet, and then they go up and usually tip them a 5, 10, or 20, but then they don't come to a local drag show that has no cover and like just don't support the scene here. So it's become... I'm not a fan of drag. I'm a fan of Drag Race. And then actual like people see what's on TV and they're like, that's drag, but it's not real drag. Like, it's drag to an extent, but mm-hmm. it's also very manufactured. Like, they are told in advance, okay, this is going to be the category. So then they have these costume designers make things and then they bring it. It's not, oh, we're in the workroom now.
It's not, doesn't have that DIY.
Yeah. It doesn't have that. That's the thing with Drag Race now. It's become just, it's a runway.
Right.
It's,
so you're not identifying with that group of people.
No, I identify the Rue girls. The only one I really like enjoy is Bianca Del Rio, because she's taken that exposure and she's become what she always was, a stand-up comic with it. Right. Like, I identify more with Bianca or Jackie Beats or Coco Peru or Varla G. Merman, like the classical entertainers who are storytellers. You know, that's where I'm with my drag, and that's what I want to accomplish with my drag. So I look to them. I don't look to these Instagram queens who can take a great photo and face tune it, but get on stage and have nothing to offer.
Right, nothing to say.
Yeah.
Would you take the opportunity if it knocked on your door?
So a Toronto Star actually interviewed me yesterday, and they said that they were like asking about the restrictions of Drag Race, and if the restrictions were gone, would I ever audition or try to get on the show?
So the restrictions now are U.S. only, or how?
The restrictions have always been U.S.
only. Okay.
Yeah, we have our first Canadian queen that is going to be on the show, but that's because she was sponsored.
Oh, okay.
And has worked in Nashville since, I believe, 2015.
Made some inroads there.
Yeah, so she's had her working visa and green card, all that stuff. But if they took the restrictions off and Canadians could apply, I'm not sure I would, because I'm not a statuesque model like some of these girls. And a campy clown with a side of glam and a heaping serving of sarcasm and wit, you know? And I'm not sure how well that would bode on the show. They definitely cast for certain people for editing reasons. And just the fandom it's created is a very toxic fandom. Queens get bashed constantly on social media because, oh, you eliminated this queen or you did this. People take it way too seriously, not realizing all these people are getting paychecks at the end of the day. You can still be supportive and appreciate drag, but they just, the stan culture that they've created on Twitter is just, it's very toxic. And it's a bunch of like 12-year-old girls or these like young gay boys who don't actually know what drag is and haven't done their research, who think that they can dictate what drag is. If you don't look like a Rue girl, you're not doing drag correctly.
That's the story of pop culture, though, at the moment. I mean, really anybody with light on them right now is facing that army.
Pretty much, yeah.
Ready to go. But it is sort of acute in the sense that when you look at, as you point out, the Rue girls and Drag Race and everything that happens under the umbrella of that production team, I can imagine just how intense it becomes when people are being critical.
And, yeah, it's just interesting when people who actually have never dressed up or done drag have all these opinions and feel that they know what drag is.
Right.
And that's where I'm not sure I'd want to expose myself, my persona, my brand to that.
More with Matt Cassano, aka Heroin, in moments. But first, Art at the End of the World is brought to you by Kerner Hall and the Royal Conservatory of Music, reminding you that it's Kerner Hall's 10th anniversary concert season, including virtuoso fiddler Roby Lakatos, who is part of a long line of gypsy violinists, an incredible performer. April 5th, he will be here at Kerner Hall. Also reminding you that tickets for the exciting 11th season are on sale now. Every season, there are nearly 100 spectacular concerts by the world's top classical, jazz, roots, and world music artists. Kerner Hall is one of the finest concert venues in the world, no matter who is performing. Treat yourself. See the lineup at rcmusic.com/performance. So let's get into the theme of this program, Art at the End of the World, the podcast. It, you know, it's all fun and games until it isn't. And Matt isn't new to this profession, so he's had to deal with some very difficult situations as a gay man, as a drag queen, and as someone who plays around with the idea of gender and identity and sexuality. I mentioned off the top that I've read about some of the situations he's found himself in over the years, and it is difficult. It's heartbreaking. It really is. And I don't know when things are going to change. We think of the community here, the safe spaces, the social services, and yet there is still prejudice and anger and hate and violence. And it's terrible. It's power gone wrong. It's insecurity. It's unchecked emotional baggage is what it is. So I wanted to talk to Heroin. I wanted to talk to Matt about this. Let's get back to it on Art at the End of the World. There's a lot of changes in culture, and I think for anybody who, you know, I was talking to Karen Robinson this week about, you know, as a black woman growing up in Canada, mm-hmm. from Jamaica, trying to make her way in the Canadian acting scene, you know, you can imagine there was roadblocks and hurdles there and a specific experience. For you, both as Matt and as Heroin, and particularly your drag life, it feels like it's been very much a family situation. Like, you always seem to have at the beginning too, there were a lot of mentors in your mm-hmm. in your life and people that you looked to, and this was a group of people that you could kind of trust.
I still have mentors. Maggie Casella, she's like a comedy mentor for me. Mm-hmm. Misconception is my drag mentor. Paul Bellini has become like a writing mentor for me. So
are all people who've been around for a while too.
Yeah,
I've been there since way back.
Pretty much. Well, I mean, Paul and I just met recently, but we had written for Fab at the same time and stuff.
You'd seen Paul around.
He's actually been my writing teacher here at Second City. I feel like you never stop learning.
Yeah.
You should always keep picking up tips and tricks, and because that's the only way you can excel. You just got to keep working the muscles.
Was it also a place that, with any personal issues or just the experience of being a young man in the LGBT scene, that must have been nice to be able to have these mentors and people that you could just
speak
to about?
For guidance. And I'm trying to do that now with some others as well. Like, I've taken on drag daughters before, and I have one right now. I'm looking out for them, and I'm just saying, these are mistakes I made. Don't go down this road. Learn to figure out this might not be the best idea.
Are they listening?
They are.
Did you listen?
I did to an extent, but then there were other times where I was like, no, I just have a feeling that this will be great. And then it leads you into a very toxic environment sometimes.
Right.
Just in terms of, like, I'm just trying to guide on, like, this is where you should try to get into work, and maybe don't try so hard here because they don't actually treat entertainers as well as this place.
So some show business.
Yeah. Just
101
like
there.
Pretty much within
your world. Where does that toxicity come from? What are the traps that people fall into, or what?
Insecurities.
Yeah.
I feel like any toxic environment always stems from insecurities, because people immediately get their backs up when someone can do something that they can't. Mm-hmm.
See that raw talent on stage, and that's threatening.
Yeah. Or you just see someone excelling, doing something that you wish you could, and then right. there's like this insecurity that takes over. I mean, I've had moments of insecurity in my career, but I think I've now just reached a point where I'm like, I'm doing me.
Uh-huh.
And no one can do me. They're doing what they do. That's good for them. This works for me. This is what's helping pay bills. This is what's appealing to an audience. Like, I'm good. You go do you.
Right.
But I don't think, like, that took maturity. After 12 years, like, you get that mindset. But I that's why I'm trying to, like, teach the young queens that are starting. I'm just like, just remember, like, you're still developing, and it's interesting.
Something that struck me over the years, and I've kept my eye on your career, and it's been amazing to watch you flourish and thrive and do everything you've done, and the shows keep getting booked, and like you say, the traveling and so on, it's great. But a couple times, I can just think of two or three over the last decade, where I've been reading something on Facebook, and I'm seeing that there are moments in your career where you are facing very harrowing and difficult circumstances.
Yeah, you know? I really make the heroin name work for me.
right. I mean, most recently you had a really difficult episode, I think, with somebody in a club who wouldn't leave, and there was all sorts of...
Oh, that was a spinning incident.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah, from the death threats.
yeah, just that little one.
Yeah, that one. Yeah, that was a few weeks ago. That was just... this gentleman approached me outside and was trying to...
And you were in...
I was in drag.
Drag.
And he was trying to touch, and I kept saying, no, like, leave me alone. And he was very persistent, and... he, like, went in, came back out again, and then, like, just tried to reach again, and I was just like, no, and I went back in, and I told the bar manager, and this guy's friend was actually already being denied service, and they were being asked to leave, and they were refusing to leave, so the manager went and called police, and then I was just sitting there, and he just came up, and he just started threatening me, and... all these things, and I just sat there taking it, and my co-host was like in shock, like, what is happening? And all she could say on the mic was like, call for the manager's name. She didn't know what to do, and I just sat there and I stared at this guy just yelling at me, and I just said, all right, have a good night, after he threatened to kill me if I stepped outside. Me saying, all right, have a good night, that just triggered something, and he just like spit in my face,
right?
Yeah, so that was interesting. He was arrested that night, and as far as I know, he was still in custody because he has some priors.
Uh-huh.
No idea who he is. Don't even know his name.
So when something like that happens, I mean, it happens in, mm-hmm. in various elements of show business, but I have to imagine it's a little bit heightened in that situation because you're realizing this is coming from a place of he's a broken person mm-hmm. on some level.
I think what bothered me the most was that it happened in a safe space.
Right.
Like a queer safe space. These things have happened before to people, whether it be on the street or like in the entertainment district or just somewhere that isn't really queer. Like mm-hmm. there's been so many incidences of homophobia and hate crimes and transphobia, and for it to happen inside a queer space is, I think that's what threw me mm-hmm. because I'm like, this is supposed to be our safety net, you know, like this is supposed to be where,
and has been for a long time.
Mm-hmm. It was like a light switch went off in this guy. Like, first he's trying to make advances at me, and then all of a sudden it's just this rage. I've heard of this light switch effect, and that's why there are so many trans murders, because of people like this, who this light switch goes off, and it was just
like, they're embarrassed for themselves because they haven't dealt with some of their baggage.
I can't speak. I'm not trans. I've never experienced what it is to be trans. I consider myself more two-spirited.
Right.
I feel I have both male and female energy.
Uh-huh.
And it's just a balance between them. Some might say like that's like non-binary. I don't know what it is. I'm just me, and uh-huh. I will do whatever I feel comfortable with. But it was definitely interesting to see that, like, just his face. And that's all I am left with. I, like, everything else blurred out around him. It was just his eyes that I focused on, and just seeing that aggression. This is the aggression that so many people have seen that might not get to share their story now. And that's what bothered me. And it being in a safe space, I was like, this is... things need to change. People need to wake up and realize that we need to do more. We need to protect more members of our community. And that's what I said. And when I wrote about it, I was like, please make sure you look out for our trans brothers and sisters more.
Mm-hmm.
Keep an eye out, because I've seen what they can go through with people like that, who just have this hate and aggression for someone just being who they are.
Right.
Yeah.
It's such a time of huge correction and change. We're celebrating the differences in profound ways, and yet that is causing this sort of pushback
mm-hmm.
in every element, politically, what have you. I mean, you pointed out, you know, Donald Trump earlier. I mean, yeah. I think we're living in a weird pushback moment against a lot of the ideals that seem to be progressing and moving forward. I mean, you must... after 12 years of doing this and having experiences like that one, be seeing that incremental change, but also realizing there's a lot left to discuss as far as sexuality, mm-hmm. identity, gender issues. You know, it's a big gumbo that's still being yeah. churned.
You know. That's a good way of putting it, I guess. I love any sort of food reference.
Does it feel like the needle's moving? Do you feel like everything's in a better place now than it was maybe when you and I met in 2008?
Honestly, I'm not sure.
No.
Because there have been advances, but there have been setbacks too. I mean, we are living in America Junior right now in Ontario. Mm-hmm. Like, we have a premier.
You're feeling that.
Oh yeah, we have a premier who's just hurting people who are already hurting.
Right.
It's upsetting because it makes you think, like, who voted for this guy?
Right.
Kind of.
Not Toronto, apparently.
No. And that's what it's interesting too, because there's so many people who outside of Toronto get to dictate Toronto, but they don't actually experience Toronto. They don't live here. They don't know what it's like to get around this city. They don't know what it's like to deal with the TTC.
It's like the kids tweeting about RuPaul's Drag Race.
Exactly.
They don't
people
really know.
People who have opinions and telling you, oh, you should do this, you should do that, but they've actually never done it themselves. And that's the culture we live in now, where it's people have opinions who maybe shouldn't always express their opinions.
Right. The democracy of information and the ability to express yourself has not necessarily all led to positive change.
Cool, freedom of speech, all for that.
Yeah.
But it's also like respect other people, you know, like just because you think a certain way doesn't mean other people do. So you don't need to be the loudest voice in the room. People need to honestly stop for a second and listen to others, because then a conversation can happen and maybe someone can learn something from what someone else is saying.
And maybe have a little fun along the way.
Yeah.
Right?
Make a new friend, you never know.
No.
A new friend you can debate with constantly.
Tell me about some of your favorite nights as a performer. Maybe something you saw or something that you did that stands out as a particularly strong showing of your craft.
Yeah, like I'm excited where I'm headed with my drag. One moment I will say that enjoyed was I did 1,000 Miles by Vanessa Carlton,
right,
which has become such a campy, ridiculous throwback song.
Right.
I performed it, and I was performing at a venue where you could actually see the street. So I left the venue so the audience could still see me, and then I like hailed a cab, and as the song was ending, it was like, you know, I'll walk 1,000 miles, I get into the cab, and I said to the guy, I'm like, just drive a little bit, I'll give you $5, because someone had already tipped me, and so I had money in my bra, and I was like, I'll give you $5, just take me there, I just need to make it look like I'm driving away. So then he's like, oh, okay. So I get in as the song's ending, and then close the door, and then he drives away as like the piano is fading out.
Oh my god.
That was a lot of fun. And then people were like, did she leave her suitcases still here?
Right.
Like, did she go home? Did she have her keys?
That is a great moment.
Yeah, like that, like moments like that, that's what I enjoy.
Improvisational.
Oh, completely.
And it all worked out timing-wise. That's pretty great.
Yeah.
Was there you talked about sometimes where occasionally you've seen somebody really impressing you and that's maybe rattled you a little bit.
Early.
Sure.
Early.
Yeah.
That was mostly when I was really just trying to establish myself. And I think all new queens go through that, where they're just like, I need to be the best. I need to stand out.
Right.
So when someone else is doing something you can do, you immediately are like, why can't I do this?
Right.
You know, and I've had some conversations with queens who have been doing it just as long as I have, or a little less, and they've said that they're like, I used to like think to myself, why aren't I as glamorous as this one, or why am I not as pretty as this one, or why am I not as funny as you? You know,
right.
Like,
right.
And they question things, and then they realize, well, that's because I'm this. This is what I do.
Uh-huh.
That's what they do. That's what they do. That's what they do. And this is what I do. And I think it takes maturity and experience, and then you kind of find your groove and your niche.
Who's your favorite drag queen right now
in the local scene, or just
could be in yeah, maybe in the local scene or and then beyond?
Beyond, like, I will always be a fan of Coco Peru.
Mm-hmm.
That, like, she's just epitomizes what I love. And Bianca Del Rio, like, I love that she gets to tour a comedy show and write it herself.
Who should we be looking out for? Who's the up-and-comer? It's tough, right? That's going to put you in a spot.
Well, it's not only that. It's just there are... Drag Race has created this what I like to call cosplay queens.
Okay.
Where it's people who watch the show and are like, oh, look at all the fame they're getting.
Right.
Oh, I'm going to start doing drag. So then they don't do their research. They don't do their homework about what drag is, what it stands for, what you can do with it. They just immediately go and buy stuff on Amazon and then buy followers on Instagram. And they think, oh, I'm going to be like a drag race queen. And they walk around looking for this instant fame. And they don't know what it is they offer. Like when I started, I was like, my goal is to make people laugh. So now when a new queen comes up, I'm like, what's your goal in drag?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why did you start this?
Right.
And when they say, oh, I really like Drag Race, I'm like, that's not a good answer.
That's not going to
no.
That's not going to serve you for a long time.
No. Like, no. You're going to be a
not flash. Sustaining.
Yeah. Like, good luck making an impact, you know?
Right. You'll have a good first show and then that'll be.
Yeah. So that's why it's hard for me to say, like, up and comer. Like, I love my drag daughter, Moscato.
Mm-hmm.
She's a comedy queen as well. And I call her the Melissa to my Joan.
Right.
Like, she's like the perfect little right. sidekick.
Yeah.
She's done quite a few shows with me now. We just have great chemistry on stage and off stage.
That's fun.
Yeah, we talk every day. And it's like, it's weird. But there's a 10-year difference between us. Like, she's 21, I'm 31. And
you got to have people like that in your life, though, you know?
Yeah.
It's nice to have that fresh perspective.
Yeah. So it's like, I've been mentored before and now I get to mentor, so it's a nice little flip. So I guess locally I would say Moscato. I know people will be like, oh, it's just because she's your daughter. It's hard. There's a lot of new queens, but I don't know how many I would actually give the term queen to.
Right.
I would say it's a lot of drag people right. in drag.
Right.
Because I think now, especially with Drag Race and all the people that are starting it, I think now you really have to earn the title of a queen,
right?
Because you have to,
maybe more than ever.
Yeah, because there's so many elements to being a drag queen that people don't realize, and you need to know or have some knowledge or be able to do at least a few of them.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not just, oh, I'm gonna go out there and lip sync this song. It's like, you need to be able to work a microphone, you need to be able to adapt to the crowd that's in front of you.
Sure. Crowd work.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's why I started coming to Second City and started taking classes. Cause I'm like, no, I want to like work this muscle. I've worked it enough on stage, just guessing. Now I want the formal training for it. So
it's great.
I've done stand up. I've done the writing. Next term I'm taking acting one. Now my road is to do conservatory here and be the first drag queen on the main stage. That's my goal. I want to be the first drag queen on the main stage.
That's a great goal.
So that's where
I hope you get it.
Me too. Who knows?
Yeah, it's true.
But it's just like a vision board thing. It might not come true, but it's something to aspire to.
Well, this has been a treat, and it has been so exciting for me to watch your career really happen over the last 10 years, and I love your commitment to
performance. I'm glad, because I've forgotten most of it.
I love your commitment to performance, and I love everything you've done, and I love that you've shared online some of the trials and tribulations you've gone through. It gives me certainly a new respect for what it is you do and putting yourself out there like that. So,
thank
Matt,
you.
Thank you. Thank
no
you for
problem.
Being here
Thank
today.
You for sitting down with me and chatting.
So that is it. Great talk. And I really loved reconnecting with Matt, his drag performance persona, Heroin. Heroin is at Woody's on Church Street every Sunday night at 9 p.m. and on various other days throughout the month. And she will be making her debut at Comedy Bar on April 9th during the evening Story with Chong is what it's called. And if you listened a couple episodes back when I had Chris Locke on the program, we talked a little bit about Comedy Bar. Great venue, so do catch Heroin there on April 9th. Also, on Instagram, it's at HeroinTheDQ. Twitter, at HeroinTheDQ. I guess that stands for drag queen. So go ahead and follow Heroin using those social media handles. Thank you once again to our sponsors today, Kerner Hall at the Royal Conservatory of Music, Salter Street Brewery, Super Frame Framing Services, and Red Eye Media. And thanks for checking out the show. You can get in touch or just check out old episodes, artattheendoftheworld.com, artattheendoftheworld@gmail.com. We're on Facebook. Twitter is @artattheend, and my Instagram handle is @wigdad. Matt Cassano and I are back on Thursday. Heroin will pick 5 pop artists who are used either today or in the classic sense, for drag queens. He's going to go through some of the most played artists within the drag community. So we'll look forward to that on Thursday. And don't forget, you can hear my program, The Oasis, on the New Classical FM weekdays from 3 to 7 p.m. Eastern, 12 to 4 Pacific. That's at classicalfm.ca. And you can watch the broadcast live on YouTube if you prefer. In Toronto, the FM dial is 96.3, Cobourg at 103.1, and Collingwood at 102.9. However you listen, we'll speak to you then and for as long as we can.